Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show. That's a new one, right? Is that that guy Drake?
Yeah, it is that guy Drake.
Big Drake guy?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Big Did our Drake next guy. Guest let this guy into a nightclub the way that he used to with The Weeknd?
Oh, I don't know that story.
Yeah.
This insider, though.
I always tell that story.
Whoa.
I knew The Weeknd before he was The Weeknd.
Yeah, I know. You weren't cool to him, right? Like, you kind of bullied him, right?
Right?
I didn't have that much pull to let everybody in with camo everything, camo hair ties, camo everything. It was, no.
This cost Stewie, a cameo in Uncut Gems, too. He could have been right there. He could have been part of The Weeknd's security crew in that one.
This insider... Yeah. is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. So how about that boring Leafs game last night?
That's good. If I'm a coach. And,
you like that, eh?
Anybody but the fans, I like that because mm-hmm. that's the sign of a true team, a true team that's ready to take the next step in their development. And you can't get into the shootout. So that was the one thing I was worried about. The Rangers trying to open the game up in the third period, and they turned mm-hmm. into a track meet. But again, they stuck to defense, played the right way, got the 2 points. On to the next one, as they say.
We had this realization today in the 6 o'clock hour. It was mostly me, but JD backed it, so I know that's good. The Leafs might be like the Islanders of last year, the boring defensive team. Well, sorry, they're becoming. They weren't always, but they might be becoming that style of play where defense wins you championships and defense gets you far. And although we used to kind of bully the Islanders that they were boring to watch, if the Leafs become that style of play, are we happy with that being something that we have to endure for a longer playoff push?
Endure? It's about the wins.
I know. But I was at that game last night snoozing.
Yeah, I saw the Instagram post.
Oh, yeah.
When you have Tavares and Matthews and Nylander and Marner, those guys are game breakers. So mm-hmm. they just need an opportunity to turn the game around. So it's not like they're just going to be sitting back, waiting back, but they're mm-hmm. playing the right way. And they're doing those little details that you have to do in the National Hockey League. You have to have, you know, when to get the puck in, you know, when to chip it. You got to know when to not just hold on to it and do circles around the zone. You got to know when just to put it on net. Mm-hmm. And you saw the Riley goal in the first period. Yeah. You know, normally Riley gets that. He's going for a skate around the net. Someone's mm-hmm. rolling up top and, you know, they got the puck possession concession going on there, but they got to get back to those basics, and that's what they're doing. They're keeping it simple when they need to, making the most of their opportunities in the power play, which I believe is 10 goals in the last 10 games, mm-hmm. and that's how you win hockey games. And, you know, we're looking at the numbers and the guys putting up points. The bottom six has been stepping up, Camp's line defensively, and you saw Spezza's line last night controlling the puck down low, wearing down the other team. So it's a good team win, and that's what you know, good, solid teams that are contenders do.
Their last two games were their best two games of the season. That's the way that I feel about it. And they were boring. They were so unaesthetically pleasing. Mm-hmm. And guess what? It's not going to feel boring when they get their first playoff win, and it's based in this. And where I'm at with this is, like, I'm not trying to overreact to the moment. I think the Leafs were this team last year just with not the same personnel. Like, we always looked at them and said, man, they're not going to be able to be as loaded. They're not going to be as loaded. And no, they don't have Zach Hyman, right? They don't have as much top-tier talent. But if you remember, at the beginning of the year, where Sheldon Keefe had tried to plan to put Zach Hyman was as the third line. He wanted to have this, like, anchor shutdown line that could also give a little bit of an offensive push. And that's what they have right now with Kampf, Kasha, and Engvall. And it fits. It's working with this team. And that, like, I don't want to say it's an identity line or anything like that, but there's a little bit of it where it's like those guys go out and play the way that the coach wants them to play every single shift, essentially. They are unbelievably consistent so far this year. And now I'm kind of looking at this team saying, you know, people thought they were a little bit more offensive last year just because they were playing in the North Division against, you know, just corpses. There were so many games where it was just like, oh, they're playing the Canucks. And again, oof, they're playing a dead Flames team. They're playing Senators who are completely overwhelmed. So yeah, they ended up racking up a bunch of goals. Matthews has one of his seasons. Marner has his season, blah, blah, blah. Really, the story of last year was that they took a step defensively as a team. Now that's extending into this year, and it's extending with good goaltending and a bottom six group with a particular line that is really buying into that. And it's like, I'm sorry, but I kind of think they're good. Well, it's stupid to say that as they're winning games. But no, but I think that they've taken a step. I think that this is actually something that you should believe in. And I know that sounds stupid to say when you're a Leafs fan, and there's some people that are just cringing at it because it's the regular season. We all said playoffs, playoffs, playoffs. But man, are you with me on this? Do you feel like this is different? Because I kind of do.
Yeah, and I saw those tweets. I don't know if you were too confident in your tweets yesterday about this team, but that's maturity.
I wasn't too confident in my tweets. I said I believe in the Toronto Maple Leafs. Pray for me.
But then I think you said Heartbreak Drake hashtag or something at the end. Something that was, I don't know.
You're all over the place.
I'll check the Carfax.
Is this bad facts by you? You're supposed to be my social media guy. You're fired.
But I think, you know, when you see last year and you're looking at, the documentary, like this broke a lot of guys' heart, right? That was supposed to be the year when you go the next round and you're supposed to go all the way. Mm. You know, the cameras aren't there for you to have a first-round exit. So I think guys are probably a little bit embarrassed, and they're saying, okay, you know what? We tried it our way. We were trying to go and do what we want, put up a bunch of numbers, run a bunch of numbers, and it didn't work. So let's do it this way. And I compliment Dubas, and I don't really compliment him a lot, but he brought in the right guys. And when you see Camps and the Kashas playing the right way, not necessarily worrying about apples and getting rewarded for it with, opportunities to score goals at the right moments. It's contagious. It's contagious when you see Simmons and Spezza working so hard just for every single opportunity and getting rewarded. You know, your top guys in the league, it's contagious, and you start to play that way. And with Matthews, again, the points are going to come. Marner, the points are going to come, but I think it's a sign of maturity now where they're not just worried about the cookie times. They're going to get their 30 goals. They're going to get their 70, 80 points. But I think for these guys now, they got their money, they got their accolades. Now it's time to start winning. And that's sort of the pressure of the media in this market. They want to start winning. So I think it's almost a message to us saying, hey, you know what? We can play this way. So I think the one key is consistency. The last 10 games, they have been doing it. But again, it gets harder. December, January, February. That January to February mark is probably one of the hardest segments of the National Hockey League. So I'd like to see it be a little bit more consistent, but you can't complain. 10 out of 11 games, they're playing great hockey right now.
And you mentioned Simmons there in the names of people that have performed well. I'm impressed. I think that it looks like he did something in the offseason. JD wrote down Fountain of Youth. And and what do you think it is that he's done just to stay consistent and to be someone that is reliable so far on this fourth
line? You go to one of your camps?
He came and trained at Rex Kwando Studios. But, for Simmons, again, I trained with Matty Nichol and skated the pros a couple weeks out of the summer. And Wayne was on his own program. He wasn't worried about getting on the ice with Sagan or Wilson. He was literally training by himself. He was obviously amongst the boys, but he'd be off to the side working on exactly what he needed to work on. That's staying healthy, worrying about his hips, his shoulders, his joints, and all that. And on the ice, he'd skate by himself. So he was just focused on every little detail to get healthy, because that was sort of the issue the last couple of years. He was not feeling right since he left Philadelphia. So he paid attention to those details, got his mind right, got his body right. You know, he signed a 2-year contract, so you don't have to worry about the contract. Mm. And, you know, he's a guy, he's a glue type of guy. And you saw what he can do. You know, he came in that period, two big, big hits, protected the puck, made a pass to Ryan. So he can make those plays. He's settling into his role right now, too. But that fourth line has been playing great. Him and Spezza have been playing great, you know, this last month.
Do you think Bunting's a good long-term fit for that fourth line, or something right now while they try out Nick Ritchie on the top line?
You gotta have interchangeability, and I like to see Bunting maybe get a little bit more ice time, the fourth line as a whole. But he's a guy that he's mixing it up. He's going to the net. He's, you know, I think someone called him a rat one of the interviews, so he's ratting it up out there. But you need that. Yeah. You need that guy that has that intensity, that isn't afraid to mix it up and have that element to his game too. So, you know, for me with Matthews and Marner, and I'd like to see them have a little bit more consistency, you know, with their winger. And Ritchie right now, I don't think he's getting the job done. I know it's still relatively early, but he just seems like he's a step behind in the playmaking and getting to the net. And, that's the one miss I think was with this team this year, not getting a guy that can step in and do the job. A guy like, I'm looking off the top of my head, maybe like a Thomas Tatar. Say what you want, good, bad, or indifferent. Mm. He's putting up his 50, 60 points. They need that staple on that left side on those top two lines.
Yeah. It's funny because when you were talking about Dubas and him getting a lot of credit, I feel as though right now he is on track to finally do the Dubas thing where he went out and got guys that were around the fringes that could fit in with this roster and actually make sense, like Kasha and Camp and Bunting. Like, those are all hits. And even the Simmons, you know, he should get some credit for that one because he did give him 2 years and a lot of people were like, what? And now he's looked amazing. Richie's the only miss that he has right now. He's the only blemish on this roster where it was a bit of a miss. But Bunting, it's funny because he's a rat, but he's too much of a boy face. Like, he's too much of a boy face for me to be like, oh, this guy's a real rat. He just kind of looks like... It's like he's a little sweetheart. When people hit him in the face, I'm like, don't hit that little boy. Don't hit that little boy in the face.
It's also comical when he reacts to stuff. Yeah, he has this outsized, like, come on. Yeah, I know. It's me. Like, it's Michael Bunting. No. What do you mean it's a penalty?
Don't hit sweet
I'm
little
from Scarborough.
Bun. Yeah, don't hit little sweet bun cake. But I got one more on Simmons there, though, where it's like, okay, so he switched up some stuff, and he's on the regimen that you saw. It's different. He's skating by himself. Okay, he's taking care of his body during the off season. But there's this element of what's happening right now. And I wanted to know what he thinks or what you think he thinks or what you think even Spezza thinks about when they get these back-to-backs off, right? When they get those extra nights off. Because hockey's such a sport about, hey, Iron Man, you know, you got to play all the games. You got to play through an injury. You got to play through this. You got to play through that. And the Leafs are now kind of saying to Spezza and Simmons, hey, once in a while, we might be giving you this night off here or there. And... dare I say that those guys, especially Simmons, who's had some difficulties with his health over the last couple of seasons, like you just said it, he hasn't been right since Philly, that maybe there's not even just buy-in, that he kind of likes it.
Nope, he doesn't like it.
Okay.
I think he's on the record saying he wants to play every single game. And, you know, I blame Nick Nurse for that with the load management thing. And, you know, as hockey players, you want to be a competitor. You want to play every single game. And you know what this is, too, and I don't think you guys have really thought about this, is the agents. You know, Semyonov, you know, you got to find a way to get him in, too, and appease the agents, because you got the Russian players coming over. It's like, well, we're not sending you any more guys if you don't find a way to get them in. So I think that's part of it, too. You got to find a way to appease some of these guys that are coming over and playing, too. So I think for Simmons, he wants to play every single game. He's a competitor. You know, every game, his body is right, ready to go for 82 games. And just remember the hockey that he was playing in Philly. This guy's blocking shots, and, you know, he still hasn't put his teeth in from losing them a couple years ago as well, too. So he's ready for battle. He wants to play every single game.
Oh, God forbid they close down the pipeline that has given us Ozhiganov. Like, wow, is a what's the hit? Like, where's the hits? It's Mikheyev who's hurt all the time.
You're gonna get a call from Gold Star Hockey.
You better watch out.
Gold Star Hockey. You better be careful.
Like, we keep doing like Russian pipeline. The Leafs have got the Russian pipeline. By the way, those Russian pipeline guys, they love coming here because everybody knows who they are the second they play, and then they're kind of like, I'm Ozhiganov. I'm Zaitsev. Like, I'm McKay. Like, I'm Barabanov. Like, the
you
Russian-
say that now, but you're going to see some of these draft picks that are coming in now, and you're going to be like, oh my gosh, why hasn't this guy come over yet? Because you know what I mean? Some of these guys
draft
that are
picks
up,
is different, though.
They're go-to guys.
Sure. Rodion Amarov better be good. But outside of that, I'm just saying that it's hilarious to me of like, oh, they got to keep the Russian pipeline open. They got to have more Semyonovs and more Barabanovs and more Ozhiganovs, all the ovs that don't do anything. Like, oh boy, what will we ever do without those ovs?
I'm not talking on it because I was
afraid
of
those.
He's quiet.
You're a little chicken.
Oh, I played in Russia. I lived in Russia. Yeah. You don't talk about Russia in negative light.
Oh, so that's just leave it at
that. I'm not saying anything bad about Russia. I'm just saying that, like, the players that they've brought to the Leafs, this whole idea that it's like, oh, the pipeline.
That's going to be the headline. JD Bunkus hates Sergei Fedorov.
Yeah. Yeah. You know why that's going to be the headline? You're going to tweet that.
True.
You're going to tweet that with some me face swapping on some Red Wings fan booing at the glass, and that's there. I've liked this team. I've liked this stretch. I think that things have been going really the way that they've wanted to. I think we made some assumptions when Keith came in that we now know are completely false with the guy that he is. And I will say this too, like, this is part of the reason why I even buy into this team even more, is that watching that documentary, Sheldon Keefe was on them all year about how they hadn't accomplished anything. And you had Jumbo Joe Thornton, who I know you'll defend, but perennial loser, who's there going like, we're just having good times, good vibes, bud. And it's like, we're in the locker room, we're having just a good old time, and it's keeping it loose and it's keeping it fun. And hey, Keefe, don't be too hard on us because we're still first place in the North Division. And now he's gone. There's no undercutting of the message. It's just Sheldon Keefe. He said, I told you so. You didn't accomplish anything. You better stay consistent. You better stay tight. And I think it's going to roll throughout the season. I'm buying it, man. I'm buying it all.
Yeah, and he's not good cop or bad cop. He's just a normal cop, and he comes to work and does his job every day. And when he needs to be hard, he is. And when he doesn't, he's not. So what I like about that, just the passion. You have coaches that are some of them are indifferent or they're too cool for school. You can tell by the documentary that he genuinely cares about this team. And sometimes he has a hard time, holding back his emotions, on the refs or in the media. But that shows he cares. So I'd rather have a coach like that gets a little bit emotional sometimes than a too cool for school coach that's just, all about himself. So I like it. I think he's a good fit for this group, but I think he has the buy-in, and that's the most important part. Everyone seems to be buying in, and it's no fluke where they have success. But I'm surprised now we've been talking for 20 minutes and we haven't talked about the Jack Campbell extension, the 5 for 5 he should be getting. Let's go give him all the money.
Yeah,
I'm starting it now.
Okay,
can't give him 5 years, not at $5 million. No, that's too much.
Five times five. I said the same thing about Hyman. You guys laughed me off the radio.
That's not true.
I wasn't here.
What are you talking about? You're the
Elish,
spin
I heard
master.
You on Yahoo. You laughed me off of Yahoo.
Never.
I saw you online.
I was literally
at yahoo.ca.
The
I got an email to my Yahoo account.
Oh, yeah, I bet you did. You would have a Yahoo account, actually.
Yeah, he does.
He's of all people. You probably have like Blackberry, a Hotmail or
that's him.
MSN, Outlook. Anyway, the Jack Campbell extension, it's tough because he's playing so damn well. And every time the Leafs win, it's because he's just a consistent, steady guy. And I know he's not making these like incredible 40-50 game, saves. But even last night, a 2-1 game, he's steady, a 2-0 game, you can rely on him. So I guess the question is he gonna get too expensive, or are we gonna just see him at a 4.5 or a 5? You said 5. We talked about 4.5, maybe more similar to what Freddie Anderson got, but I guess what are your feelings on how much money he should be getting?
Well, all the money. I don't know how to quantify that, but I'll leave it up to you guys to dice up the term, but I think he's going to get his $20 million. Mm-hmm. And, there were some issues, some questions about his consistency to stay healthy and can he do it over a longer period of time? But he's proving right now that last year is no fluke.
Exactly.
He had 17 wins last year. He's already got 10 in 15 games. He seems like he's durable. So if he stays healthy, I think, he's proven that he is a number one goalie in the National Hockey League. So for me, you can't let a guy like that go to market. And I think now you got to lock him up sooner than later. Look what this extension did for Riley. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to worry about it. Doesn't have to worry about JD memeing him or asking about it all day. You need to trade him. That was the narrative. I think that was Ben. I'll put that on Ben, JD. Joe, you need to trade him now and
trade
get
who?
The assets.
Riley.
He signed Riley. He got his extension. He doesn't have to worry about the money or the media. He gets out, plays hockey. That's why he's having success too. So for Jack Campbell, I think he's past the litmus test. Give him his money. Let him get down to focusing hockey and taking this team to the next level.
First of all, I was the one who at the very beginning of the season was just like, Zach Hyman's going to get a huge bag of money and people are going to lose their minds at how much it is with the term and the cash. And even I looked that up. I did my little search at JD Bunga's ads too. You doing the memeing of the show were memeing me with Zach Hyman all the money, because I was calling him Zach all the money Hyman. This is exactly, this is going off the same thing. I did say trade Morgan Riley if you're not going to re-sign him. I like Morgan Riley. I advocated for exactly this. Give him a contract, but it had to be one where he did sacrifice a bit of cash. He did that. They kept him. But what they couldn't do was what they did with Hyman again, which is another own rental. Like, it's just they've gone down that path too many times. Dubas now has to, I think, be a little bit more decisive when it comes to the guys he wants to keep versus the guys he's going to let walk. And that's how it like does tie into Campbell, right? Mm-hmm. Is that it does sort of feel like, to me anyways, and we can agree or disagree, this whole notion of, hey, if they let Jack Campbell play out the entire season, he could end up staying. But I do think that it's a lot more likely that he's leaving, because that means that he's accumulated a very, very good year and that he wants to get that $20 million or he wants to get that whatever. And if you're Dubas, the temptation would be, ooh, do I really want to give Jack Campbell this when I feel as though my team is playing this kind of defense as a group that I kind of can cheap out on it a bit and get by with lesser goalies? I'm just saying that that's the temptation that he has to fight.
But you do that, but you have Mrazek locked in, I think, for another 2 years at $3.5 million.
But you could dump that.
Seems like a stumble right now just due to health. Yeah. So you lost Freddie, who was a stabilizer for a bunch of years now. Now you have another guy that you just sort of fell into your lap. You got to find a way to lock him up. If not, well, I don't know what you're going to do. You're going to go find an Nedeljkovic Detroit did? No, you can't. You got it. You have it here. Do not lose that, because that's going to be a problem. I said, you are going to miss Freddie Anderson. You're going to know the importance of it when he's gone. You're not really feeling that yet because you got lucky with Jack Campbell. You have to lock him down.
Well, he's been a joy to watch. And also, when he's at the podium, you just, like, you just can't really believe that he's, genuinely that, I don't know, like, what's the word I'm looking for?
That he's that nice? That nice? He's that genuine? Like, that he's genuinely that genuine?
Yeah, I guess. But anyway, it's been quite the experience over the last year and a half with Jack Campbell and the last season especially. So we'll see where it goes. I think you're right with the 5x5. If he continues playing this way, I can't see him being any less expensive than that. JD doesn't like it. Anyway, Anthony, a joy as always. Anthony Stewart, NHL on Sportsnet.
Number one super fan of the memes.
Number one fan of the fan morning show. Pleasure speaking to you.
That is true.
We'll catch you next week.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Talk soon.
Mm-hmm. See you, everyone.
King of the memes. Uh-huh. That Insider was brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit Don Valley North, DonValleyNorthLexus.com. That was pretty good.
That was the best read we've ever had.
Well, now I'm worried someone's going to type in Don Valley North, DonValleyNorthLexus.com.
I wonder if Don Valley North listens to the show, because I just like talk to them like they're my BFFs, and yeah. I have yet to ever been reached out about, you know, being in commercials
Here's the thing, you already are in the commercials.
Giving away your Lexus's.
What do you think an ad read is?
Yeah, what do you think you're doing
Lexi?
Here?
Lexi? Is it Lexus's? Is Lexi?
What do you think an ad read is?
Yeah, but like,
if you don't think that's
I would enjoy a personal reach out from Don Valley North about like a partnership moving forward to like do their commercials on the
air.
They
have a partnership with.
They're already one of the key sponsors on your morning radio show.
So you know how...
But I want to meet them.
You know how like every couple of weeks your bank account number goes up?
It's from Don Valley.
Partially.
How you're getting TV opportunities?
Thanks, Don Valley North, Lexus.
Free leaf tickets and stuff like that?
It has nothing to do with them.
Well, that part doesn't. Well, although you probably wouldn't have reached out to them if you hadn't been trying to get us a guest for this show to discuss that series.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody texted in wholesome. Jack Campbell's wholesome. That's exactly the word I was looking for. Thank you very much for that and appreciate it.
What a nice boy.
So before we take the break, quickly, because I want to be on time for Pete Walker. We didn't really hit on the Vladdy thing from yesterday. Mm. And there was also, it was like Barrios gets in front of the cameras. He speaks. Hated his outfit and haircut. Got to say. Says somebody's got to style the guy better.
Well, I sent you guys. I know.
That's tough. It was a tough look for Barrios. I'm just saying. It wasn't great. He could have done a lot better. Someone should have been there for him.
It was an awkward fade.
Why did they put... Why do you think Vladdy agreed to be on TV? You think that's an ask? They go, hey, Vladdy, please go on TV. Because you knew he was going to lose MVP. And it was weird. It was just a weird thing where they asked him to be...
I feel like you just kind of have to.
But with Semien, I only saw the Vladdy things. I guess if you're baseball, the ask is, hey, Vlad, you being in front of the camera and you being here and you being the runner-up is still good for the game and good for your brand and good for... everything. I just thought the last thing I want to do if I know I'm losing an award is to be on camera and be sitting there the entire time going, okay, when are you going to announce Shohei? Because there's no way Vladdy believed that he was even going to be close to Shohei. And some people were freaking out. I had some folks in the old mentions. It should have been closer than that. And
you think that there was going to be zero first place?
Yes.
Well, zero.
Hang on.
Yes.
So here's my issue with
not even one.
It being the idea it should have been closer.
I know.
What you're saying then is that you believe that Shohei was the MVP, but you believe some of those 30 people should have thought that Shohei wasn't the MVP.
It's so stupid. It's the most backwards thing of like, oh, you lost, but you didn't lose by as much as I wanted you to lose by. Like, no. There's no spread to cover here. Like, it's just was he the MVP or not?
And Vlad would have been prepared. Like, I know they announced these things then, so they have to do the idea of having everyone camera available and stuff like that for content. But part of the media relations staff job is to straw poll these votes and have a good idea of if they're going to be needed for, like, I think the setup would have been a little better and a little more ready to go anyway.
I like to picture Vladdy's camp as so yes, Manny, that they go, Vladdy, you're going to win the MVP. And all year long, he thought he was winning. And he just had a circle of people that were like, you're the guy, Vlad, that nobody pushes back in the group.
Well, here's the thing now.
Uh-huh.
I hope that's the case, and I hope he goes, you know what? If that wasn't enough to win the MVP, just wait for next year.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know what an even better season looks like because he just had the best season ever by a 22-year-old. Uh-huh. And I'm not sure how high that offensive ceiling can, like what is the ceiling of a of an offensive player? Mm-hmm. But that 166 WRC plus, I don't know, maybe it nudges up to like 190. Maybe he starts hitting permanently like Danny Jansen pulling the ball.
Mm-hmm. What is the ceiling?
Friend of the show, Danny Jansen.
I was just...
I know you...
Definitely friend of the show.
It's right there.
What is the ceiling of this Blue Jays rotation next year? Let's ask a man who...
will help determine it.
Well, not will only help determine it, but what do you think Pete's thing is right now? Like, pitcher whisper?
Kind of.
Anti-walk savant?
Guy who tells you, hey, stop throwing balls.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny that his last name's Walker.
It's not a great name for a pitcher.
I never thought about that.
Can I tell you guys something before we break and go to Pete?
Yeah, please.
I feel like Pete Walker, like a lot of his success is just that he's a really scary looking guy. Like he's got the big, tall, bald guy with muscles like dad look where it was like, better have my daughter home by 10:30. And you're like, yes, sir. That he goes out there and is like, throw a strike. And you're like, you got it.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Like I don't know how much of it is even beyond that. He's the ultimate like scary dad vibes. That's next. Pete Walker, Blue Jays pitching coach. It's the Fan Warning Show. JD Bungus, Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar.
Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar wooing over there. It's JD Bunkus.
We're about to sleep forever.
Vic's off-score
day, and this is the benefit of being Vic.
Yeah.
I have it on good authority. This song was not originally on the off-score list. He felt the vibes. He felt the energy, and he called an audible on the fly.
Yeah, DJ Vic.
Yeah, that's the kind of adjustment that our next guest has helped make with a lot of pitchers. Over the years as Toronto Blue Jays pitching coach, we're joined now by Pete Walker, who I'm introducing because, Pete, JD is afraid of you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He is.
Why is that?
I just think you look like the kind of guy who, if I, you know, went out with your daughter and you were like, bring her home at 10:30, I'd be like in the driveway at 10:05. Like, I'd go for one drink with your daughter and we'd be at the restaurant. And I'd be like, check, please. As soon as, like, you know, when you order the table and you're in a rush, you're like, I got to get the bill right away. So you just like, and they bring out the drink. I'm like, can we also get the bill? I'll just be staying for the one. That would be it. You just have that kind of look, Pete.
That's funny.
Yeah, it might be.
It's all a facade.
Yeah.
It's all a cover. I'm really very, very nice and soft-spoken. That's how I go about my business.
You know what is... So I've done this before. I've talked about this with Tim Leeper. You know, your former colleague and now our colleague. And I always do that. I'm like, Leap, tell me the truth. Like, when Pete Walker, like, you owe me on his bad side. He's like the sweetest guy I've ever met. And I was like, no way.
Yeah, I mean, that's the reputation. Pete, I've talked to you down at the park before. Yeah. You're wonderful. And I think it's the combination of... you know, the vibe, but also the arms. Like, the arms. Yeah. Like, I just, I picture you
mustache,
there
height,
and
arms,
like,
the whole
Robbie
thing.
Ray's having a bullpen day, and you're coaching him up, but you're standing there doing curls the whole time.
You guys are killing me. I don't know about that. Yeah, anyway.
So, Pete, your work with Robbie Ray, who obviously won the Cy Young this week, you know, you look at Ray's statistical profile and he's had some highs before and he's always had the strikeout stuff, but the walks dropping off feels like the big thing for him here. And obviously you weren't just like, hey Robbie, you should walk fewer guys. But what was the focus of your work with him and what do you think it is that unlocked that next level for him this season?
Well, you know what, we focused on minimizing our walks with just about every pitcher on our staff. It was really a focus this year. The last couple of years, our walks kind of jumped up a little bit after the 15 and 16 seasons, and we wanted to get back to really minimizing walks, not giving free passes, make sure we're attacking the zone. So Robbie fell into that category. You know, obviously coming from Arizona, there were some issues there, and he had already started to work on his old arm stroke, trying to get that back, so we focused on that. But for him, it was really getting in the strike zone and getting strike one. So, you know, moving our catchers a little bit more on the plate for him made a difference. You know, because he was a guy that certainly with his kind of stuff, a two-pitch mix, can't be behind him to count consistently. And, you know, that's what was happening in Arizona, 1-0, 2-0. So getting strike one with his nasty stuff made a huge difference. He started really commanding the baseball and dominating hitters because of that. And, you know, obviously with his work ethic and his off-season conditioning, coming into the season stronger than ever, made a huge difference. Having a little bit of hip turn in his delivery helped him keep him over the rubber. And then it was just really the consistency and gaining that confidence again. And I think he was able to do that. But once he started getting strike one, it was basically over with his nasty slider and a 95-mile-an-hour heater. He just came after guys and finished them off.
So obviously you already have a ton on your plate with the pitchers that are already on the roster. But is this a collaborative group that comes to you and says, hey, Pete, like, because this hasn't been the first reclamation project. And I know Robbie Ray had been an all-star before, but, you know, I think his ERA was somewhere around 7 when you guys ended up getting him. Do they come to you and say, hey, Pete, we like this guy. Do you think that there's something that you can work on with him that can get him to the level that we see him as? Like, what is the process when it comes to guys that are not on the roster, or is there not one?
Right. No, there definitely is. And our front office, our analytics group does a great job of pinpointing guys that we think we can work with. You know, there are things that they do very well that maybe they aren't doing enough of, or there's an area to reassess their pitch arsenal and what they're using in certain counts and when they're using certain pitches, or maybe utilizing a pitch more or less. So we have a great group that we've developed and built in this organization. I consider us, you know, elite in that area when it comes, like, I think of the Dodgers, the Yankees, and other organizations that spend a lot of money in that area. And we've built a tremendous group that can pinpoint guys and find areas that we can improve. And then it's up to the coaching staff to do that. But, you know, it's a collaborative effort. Matt Bushman does a great job in our bullpen with the pitchers as well. And, you know, we just have, you know, kind of come up with a good system that we trust and we work together on. But, you know, with Robbie, you know, we definitely wanted to keep him. I fell in love with Rob, you know, the end of the previous season, just looking at his stuff and what he could potentially do, his work ethic. And I knew he was on a mission. So this season, to be honest with you, when we signed him back quickly, there was a reason. We felt very confident that he had turned things around or was going to continue to turn things around, and, you know, pounded the table to get him to stay and be with us. And I'm really not surprised he had this kind of a season.
So what does this look like for Nate Pearson in terms of this upcoming season, his off-season plan, and maybe what his biggest hurdle is to becoming a full-time starter for the Blue Jays?
Yeah, I think with Nate, obviously, I think it's, you know, we still see him as a starter, and, you know, obviously he can throw the ball 100 miles an hour and he can spin the ball and has good break and stuff. So, you know, it's just a matter of getting his confidence to a certain level. Obviously keeping him healthy is number one priority. But the more you see him pitch in the big leagues, even in a relief role, you started to see him getting comfortable this past season. And I think with him, it's really just going to be innings and getting him as comfortable as quickly as possible at the major league level, trusting his stuff, which it's kind of crazy to say when you throw 100 miles an hour to trust your stuff, but really just to have a purpose behind each pitch, to understand what you're doing as a pitcher, and, you know, and then game plan a little bit. But Nate, we still see Nate as a big piece to this puzzle. When we think of winning a World Series next year and the years after, we consider him a frontline starter and someone that can really help us out.
Yeah, it's tough when you're on the outside, because someone like myself, I watch Nate Pearson, he has that stuff, he's had that profile, he's someone who works so diligently, and he has for such a long time, right, with his mechanics and with the stuff that he puts in during an off season, that you watch him go out there. Like, we've seen the flashes, right? We saw the Tampa Bay appearance in the postseason where he goes out as a relief pitcher and he just dominates, and you go, oh, my God.
Yep.
Like, that's who this guy could be. And then there are moments where you look at him and go, oh, it must be between the ears, right? Like, this has to be mental stuff. This has to be confident stuff. And I felt a little bad for him this year because Manoah comes out and he's just like Mr. Confidence, where he's like, yeah, I don't care. I'm going to be the same way every time. And that was the thing that we kept all saying about Alec, was that we loved about him was even when he would struggle, he didn't really deviate and he would just kind of keep going after it and stick with it. And do we, like, how much of it is with that, with Nate? Because clearly there have been injuries, and obviously he needs to build up that arm to be a starter. But how do you balance as a pitching coach where you're dealing with somebody when they're fighting confidence of like, hey, how am I supposed to manage when to pull a lever, when to leave a guy alone? Like, how does that component work for you?
Yeah, you're spot on. I mean, everybody learns at different rates. And for Alec, obviously, he just came in and took advantage of a situation, was totally confident in his ability, and was just unfazed. And everybody learns differently, and everybody breaks into the big leagues differently. Not everybody breaks in like Alec. But it is, as coaches, you know that, it really is, you know, to come up with an exact percentage is kind of strange, but 90% mental. I mean, it's about understanding who you are, understanding the situation, not trying to do too much, just staying within yourself. All those crazy, you know, sayings, but they are so true when it comes to performing at the big league level and in front of fans and, with the pressure that, you know, some of these guys feel. And once they can kind of relieve that and, you know, and just go out there and just play the game and trust their stuff, it makes such a difference. But Alec is rare. Nate is more the norm, where guys take a little while to break in and understand that. But with Nate as well, it really is. There's some physical things that have happened that have kept him from doing that. Mm-hmm. So once he is 100%, which I really feel he's going to be this year, I think we're going to see a different person.
Another example like Manoah, who kind of that assuredness of who you are and how you come out each start, is Jose Berríos. Yeah. You guys acquired him midseason. Good little run for him. And then obviously the 7-year extension the other day. When you acquire a pitcher like that who's had such long-term and consistent success midseason, in your role, do you kind of sit back and observe for that half season and then think ahead to, hey, maybe we'll tweak this in the offseason or I see an opportunity here? Or are you working with him on stuff day one?
Yeah, it's always a feeling out process. I think every pitcher is different. You know, every personality is a little different. So as a coach, you got to figure out, you know, how to approach that person. Some are very open and ready to work. Some just want to do their thing and kind of be left alone for a little bit. So you got to treat everybody differently. I think that's a big mistake a lot of coaches make, is that, you know, they treat everybody the same, and that's not how it works. So with Jose coming over from Minnesota, obviously had a great track record, had a lot of success, you know, and was a very personable, welcoming guy too. But we kind of let him do his thing. And then there were some issues there that cropped up, and we discussed them, and he was very willing, you know, with a little bit of, he changed his delivery a hair and, which I thought simplified things for him. And I think he really took off after making that adjustment. But with him, he knows how to pitch. He's got a tremendous fastball. He can spin the ball, and his breaking ball is as good as anybody's in baseball. So he's going to have success, period. But it's just a matter of getting him to that elite level, and I thought we saw that towards the end of the year.
We're talking to Blue Jays pitching coach Pete Walker. So we had Danny Jansen on yesterday. We talked to him a little bit about Ryu, and we were actually joking around, asking him about like how frustrating it can be at times when you have a guy that has that many pitches and who is shaking you off and is like locates. It's like we were just kind of shooting it about it. But I mentioned like, hey, we wanted to also get a little insight into Ryu and how he was feeling at the end of the season, because it was clearly a very proud veteran pitcher who hasn't had a lot of struggles throughout his career, right? His struggles have come with injury, not with actually not being able to locate or getting knocked around to that degree. And Danny mentioned that he thinks the rest is going to be the big thing for Ryu this offseason, that rest is going to be massive for him. And I wonder if you feel like that's the right diagnosis, or there's something else this offseason where you're saying, you know, with Ryu, it's a mechanical thing, or it's something different that is going to be the point of emphasis to get him back to the guy that Blue Jays fans are accustomed to.
Yeah, I think, you know, we pushed him this year. There's no doubt. And it was kind of not a necessity. You know, I think next year we've already discussed some ways to kind of make sure that he stays fresh, whether it's skip a start here and there or build in some extra days for him. But I think it's the first time in his career that he struggled towards the end. And, you know, we did see a little bit of a different Ryu. But I think it was more his arm slot had dropped a little bit. I think he was, you know, I don't think he'll admit it, but I think the season wore on him a little bit. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, also being a veteran guy going from Dunedin to Buffalo, it was really the first time he got to pitch in Toronto in 2 years. And I think just the entire process wore him down a little bit. But I think this year, I think we're going to definitely focus on scheduling him a little bit differently, making sure he is fresh, making sure that arm slot stays where it needs to be. Because once his arm drops a little bit, the changeup gets a little flatter. The breaking ball doesn't spin quite the same. So keeping him fresh is critical for us. So, you know, maybe it won't be 33, 35 starts. It might be 28, 29, or, you know, 30. You know, just to find a way to keep him fresh, I think, is really important. But I think for him, we expect him to get back to the same Hyunjin Ryu he was the previous year, where he was so good for us. And, you know, I think that's really what we're going to look at and focus on.
Well, Pete, congrats on an incredible season, man. And I know that it didn't end the way that you guys wanted it to, but yeah, the starting pitching was incredible, and it basically stayed that way all year. And it really did kind of feel like, yeah, Pete Walker, everything he's touching is turning into gold here. And I know that you give all the credit to your pitchers. Yeah, I'm just saying. I don't know. Like some people in this room, when they traded for Robbie Ray, were like, what the hell are they doing? This is the last thing that they need right now is another guy that walks everybody. Right. And when they got Steven Matz, some people in this room were like, Steven Matz, why is Steven Matz? Like, this feels like, you know, they need an actual better star. Some people in this room were like, this is going to be one of the worst rotations in all of baseball last year. So it's like, you know, some people, we won't name who in this room. Could have been Ailish.
And Blake and I didn't work here at that time, just so you know, we're new.
But they could have said it in private.
No, we were not even in the room, I'll tell you that. So
they could have said it in private, Pete. They could have said it in other places. You don't know. You don't know what they're up to. Hey, man, this was great. And again, congrats.
Yeah, you got it. Anytime. It's a lot of fun talking to you guys. So looking forward to a huge year next year.
Thanks, man. Congrats. Pete Walker, Blue Jays pitching coach. There was lots of great stuff there.
Yeah, I was so tempted. I want to go back to his question when you asked him about his involvement in identifying potentially the next Robbie Ray or Stephen Matz. And like, he would never tell us on air, obviously, but
who
I want to know.
I know.
Yeah.
Who's the pitcher? He's like, I can fix him. I can fix him.
I know.
And I'm going to be honest. I know I've been banging this drum too much.
Are you going to say that guy from Colorado again?
I think it's John Gray.
Oh, my God.
I think Pete Walker
can
fix him.
He's not even a real person. I looked him up. There's no John Gray.
I think he looks at that 9% walk rate and has seen where Gray's been at other points in his career. And is like, I can get that down to 5.5.
I love when people in sports don't speak down to the audience. And that's why an interview like that is so great. Because Pete tells you some stuff about Ryu there, about his arm slot, and the way that they're going to handle him, where you as a fan now get to feel smarter.
Yep.
And that's one of the true privileges I feel in this job at times, is that, hey, when you get an opportunity to speak to a Pete Walker and you put him in that right place, that he will give you those things and that he will give kind of the thing back. And that interview, I thought, was incredibly insightful for the Blue Jays, where it's like, you know, they love Robbie Ray and they want to bring him back because he said it. He's like, we tried to lock him up immediately last year and we thought he turned a corner. And there's no reason to believe that that's going to diminish, right? You feel that with Nate Pearson, where you say, hey, the stuff that you're seeing is the stuff that they're working on too. Like, clearly the injuries have been a problem, but when he's been out there, he's a guy with incredible stuff that still needs to find a way to trust it. With Hyunjin Ryu, they do. They're going to have to make sure that a veteran pitcher who is maybe going to be the last to admit it, needs to dial back on his workload and needs to make sure that he can focus on his mechanics late in the year and that he doesn't lose those things.
And that's a really helpful note to have heading into the offseason too, where, like, I know we set things up as 5-man rotation and then you'll need depth over the course of the year, but it might be 5-man rotation and you need like a Stripling type swing man because that's 5, 6, 7 starts over the course of the year that you're going to, hey, this week we have a 6-man rotation because there's not an off day to get Ryu the extra break-in. And I think that that's something that, you know, something like load management or something like workload stuff is always one of the hardest things to understand as a fan from outside, because like there is the money involved, and there is the some guys do it. Some guys can go out every 5 days. Some guys can play 40 minutes a game. And hearing that, hey, it's not just a fatigue thing. Like, we noticed the change in arm slot. We notice what that does to his changeup and what flows from the changeup. And Pete explains it in such a digestible way that it's like, by the end of that, you're like, oh, yeah.
I get it.
Ryu should be only throwing 27, 28 starts if that's what keeps him in the best possible spot.
So I don't want to say it's the most important, but the most enlightening thing anyways from that interview for me was knowing that Pete Walker is involved in that process that you mentioned, though. Because I really do believe that the best management groups, and I don't mean this in just sports, I mean this like universally, are the ones who listen to people who have track records of success or who have talent. That you're not just telling somebody what to do and expecting that because they have it, that they can execute something, but actually bringing them in on the process and wondering how they can help facilitate those things. So knowing that Pete Walker, someone with that track record, someone who right now has done that with those pitchers, that they would say potentially, hey, we're thinking about making a deal with the Marlins, or we're thinking about going and getting John Gray. What are the things that, you know, you would identify if you were working with this guy? How high on this pitcher are you? I think that that's kind of critically important.
Big time. Because in the end, he's the one that's going to be developing, fixing. And as you said, maybe he can see things that he can tweak that you're not seeing from the normal eye, right? Well,
and I honestly believe that people are just more invested that way when you do that.
Yeah, it's a sign of good leadership.
Yeah,
and it's
it
a
really
sign
is.
Of good leadership from, you know, the analytics team. And I've always thought over the last, you know, 15 years, as we've talked about front offices getting more analytics friendly, the biggest component that we don't have eyes on and probably dictates the success of those groups is, do you have conduits who can bridge the analytics team to the front office, to the scouting team, to the pitching coach, and that kind of stuff. And that's where
with baseball, I feel like everybody is like actually all those things together.
Right. Yeah. But you still probably have like a guy who's sitting there looking at like the spin rates and stuff like that. And like the biomechanic graphs.
So
that,
you, do you have a twin?
Well, I'm not a science guy. I don't know the biomechanics and stuff, but you probably have someone on the staff who's doing that. And then, you know, you got to, obviously Pete Walker understands spin rates. I don't know if the biomechanic, those little robot thing, little robot graphics. Yeah. I don't know if those mean anything.
Those things that are outside like a car dealership, the like
wacky
the,
wavy,
the wacky wavies.
Team,
I wonder if Don Valley North has those.
All right. So it is Friday. We've got 2 minutes left in our week. Tonight we got 9:05.
Bing bonga.
We got Raptors at Kings at 10 on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Tomorrow we got a little Yates Cup action. 9:05 again.
Baby.
Leafs versus Pens at 7. A UFC fight night. And then Sunday we've got your girls, Ailish, Canada, USA.
My gals.
We've got an NFL Sunday. And then we got another Leafs-Raptors double dip.
Holy smokes.
On Sunday. We got Leafs at Islanders 7:30 on Sportsnet Ontario. And we got Raps at Golden State at 8:30 on Sportsnet. I'll be on that broadcast pregame, by the way.
Broadcast Blake.
Broadcast Blake.
Broadcast Blake. Woo!
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
Famous.
Fun weekend. So famous. We're going to have a lot to talk about on Monday.
You know what? I'm going to need to put my blue light glasses on to absorb all this TV.
Is your mom going to be able to stay up for an 8:30 start to watch Steph
Curry? My mom. Yeah, I hope she can. She might need to nap.
That's her team, right?
That's her team. It's so strange.
Golden State?
She's a big Golden State fan.
I like how you're like, it's so strange. Like, why Golden State?
Yeah.
What have they done in the last?
Just the best and most exciting team of the last
eight years. She's been on the bandwagon for a long time, that lady.
Any predictions? We got two Leafs, two Raps. What's the total? Give me a total record on those four games.
3-1. No, God, the Raps. No, 2-2.
I'm going to abstain from that. I'm just going to say that there's two things that I'm very interested in. One is that Ailish's the Leafs could be becoming the new Islanders take.
Gets put
right into the fire.
Let's
immediately.
Yeah.
So we get to come out Monday and
see if I know my stuff or not, eh?
Well, Ailish, I think we're betting the under.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
We gots to bet the under. And with the Raptors, it's just like,
good luck.
Siakam, you could have been a Golden State Warrior. Show up against them. Dominate them.
I like that.
Score a bunch of points. Okay? If you actually, you never really scored all those points against Draymond Green in the playoffs. It was only like two of your buckets that in your famous game were actually against Draymond. How about this time you actually put up, you know, a 30 piece? That'd be cool.
Leafs and Islanders a combined 20 for 30 under.
Oh, let's do it. Make some money, folks. Make some money.
Have a great weekend, everyone.